Welcome everyone, wherever you are in the world, to the Goalster podcast, where we take you behind the scenes with guests of all shades and styles and their enriching stories about their lives, their victories, their failures, their ambitions, and of course their books. I'm Humphrey Hawksley, your host for the duration, and today we're looking at our non-fiction library of fascinating topics. Please enjoy. To find out more, check us out on www.goalster.co.uk. And without further ado, let us begin.
Hello and welcome wherever you are. I'm Humphrey Hawksley and this is Goalster Inside Story, where for the next two shows, we will be talking about one of the most important elements in all our lives. Social wellness, it's now called, is one of the pillars of keeping us healthy. Getting out, mixing with people, creating trust, dealing with being let down, all of that builds self-esteem and emotional resilience. And welcome to, incidentally, to our podcast audience who will be joining us later at some future date. Goalster is relatively new to the podcast world. Just Google Goalster podcast, an array of past shows will unfold before you. Now, those of you who were with us on Tuesday saw how my co-presenting colleague, Rosie Stancer, was leading an expedition across the Sinai Desert, being helped by Bedou tribesmen. What we didn't really get to there is how does she know and when to trust a stranger? And my other great colleague, Professor Samuel Gray, told us a few weeks back, if you've got want to do something, don't just join a walking group or a pub quiz. Get yourself onto the committee so you keep up your skills of conflict resolution and reading people. Now, today and tomorrow, we're in for fascinating hours because Goalster is bringing in real experts, beginning with my guest, who you can see waiting patiently there, who used to be a real-life interrogator working, among other places, in Guantanamo Bay. That's the American base in Cuba, where Islamic suspected terrorists are sent. Now, we spoke to her a year ago on her book, You're Lying, which you might be able to see just across her left-hand shoulder there. And now we're talking about her new book. Where is it? Here it is. Honest Answers. And I kid you not, the canvas for reading people is the same whether you're dealing with family or friends or in a high-security prison. Lena might disagree with me, but human beings are human beings. So on that note, welcome Lena Sisko to Goalster Inside Story.
Thank you. It's so good to be here again, and I can't believe a year has gone by. And Humphrey, I agree with you.
About the human beings being human
beings?
Yeah, we all have love, fear, ambitions, don't we? And it's a matter of sort of triggering those. And it is a year, and it is so good to see you again.
Thank you.
And I wanted to start right off with the book, one of the elements you've got in the book, because many of us in today's world see this sort of hatred and accusations on social media. We see our politicians yelling and ripping each other apart. And we come across, I think, more and more people who are abrasive. And here we have knife crime. Across there, you have gun crime. These are dreadful things that are happening. Trust generally is diminishing. Yet in Honest Answers, you begin with a chapter called Why Being the Nice Guy Always Wins. Explain that.
Sure. When I left Guantanamo, especially in that environment, because when you say the word interrogation, everyone assumes you're up to no good and doing something bad and putting spotlights on people's head and being aggressive. And that is not what interrogation is. Interrogation is a fine art, and it's the art and science of human interaction. It's how I build rapport with you. It's how I use questioning techniques to persuade you to like me, trust me, and then want to be open and honest with me. So that's why when you're building rapport with people, it doesn't matter who you are, what you've done. If I can connect with you on some human to human level, at some point, we're going to have trust. And I always tell people whenever I teach them about this, in all my interviewing courses and classes, I say people aren't going to want to give you the truth unless they truly trust you. They have to want to be open and honest. So how can we work towards that? And so, you know, I've spent so many years trying to put away and abolish that perception that interrogation is so aggressive and harsh, Because for me, it was all about getting trust. Because when I got trust, I got the truth.
So let me just get this right about being the nice guy. In the movies and in real life, if your boss threatens you, if you have a gun against somebody's head or you're cutting someone up in order to get the answer to some code or secret thing or something, that person is not going to trust you.
I don't think so. Because if you were cutting me, I definitely would not trust you.
Right. And if your boss says, you better do this, otherwise you're going to get fired, that's a diminishing of trust, isn't it?
Absolutely. Why would you trust somebody like that? Why would you want to be around somebody like that? It's aggressive behavior. It's unethical. It's immoral. And so that behavior, although people like to think, oh, but it's going to get you the answer in that tactical environment. You know, if I don't have a lot of time and I'm under the gun, no pun intended, to get information, then I have to resort to that. Okay. My answer is no, you don't. Now, I've never interrogated in a tactical environment. But my thing and my byline, my morals, whatever you want to call it, is trust gets the truth, right? Rapport gets trust, gets the truth. It doesn't matter how much time I have. I will connect with you on some human to human level in order to get that.
And just give us an example, if you can, of how you found the similar thing happening to yourself when you were up against a terrorist that was planning some dreadful attack in Guantanamo Bay, getting that trust. And when you're dealing with your family and your very close friends where you are, is that common ground there, or am I talking about two different worlds?
Absolutely not. Because what you said earlier, we're all humans and we all will be persuaded by things that go after aspects of psychology, which every single human has. So it doesn't matter if I'm talking to my brother or, you know, my husband, or if I'm interviewing a criminal. At the heart of it, you are a human. And so what can I do? Inherently, all humans want to be honest and they want to help other people. Even the worst of the worst, as you would assume. Deep down, that's inherently who we are as human beings. And so what I do in all my work is try to get to the core of that and really strip away anything else. I call it the fluff of aggression, of anger, of, you know, whatever it is, the rhetoric that they want to say, and get to the heart of that human to tap into that inherent want to be honest and helpful.
So if you're chairing your local walking group, as I said, or if you're trying to find your way into an Al-Qaeda cell, there are these things that link. Now, we are going to have a fun competition that I've told you half about, but I haven't told you the other half. And it involves all of us here. I'm going to ask Lena five questions. And in one of them, she is going to lie. And listen carefully to what you've sort of met her a bit now, seen her body language. Put in the chat which one you think is the lie, and she's going to tell us at the end. Now, Lena's going to have to lie and answer on the hoof because I haven't told her what the questions are in advance. And I, too, do not know which one she will like. She doesn't know what they are. So here we are, Lena.
Yeah.
And I'm going to put all this in the chat after we've done it.
Okay.
Question number one, why are you in Florida?
Because my husband moved for a job.
Okay. One of your peers described you as a dead ringer for Jennifer Aniston, the film star. How does that make you feel?
Honored. I feel honored and grateful.
When you were growing up, what was your dream career?
An archaeologist. I wanted to become Indiana Jones. The female version.
An archaeologist. Okay.
Yeah.
What is your favorite movie of all time and why?
Oh, my favorite movie, Big Trouble in Little China. And why? It's just a classic cult movie.
Big Trouble, Little China. I'm going to have to remember all these, and we're going to put the answers in the chat.
I know. I hope I remember them all.
Okay. Which country do you really want to visit that you haven't yet been to?
The Maldives.
The Maldives?
Yeah, they look beautiful. It's just like the Caribbean.
Okay, that's it. Now we're going to put that into the chat and we'll just go through them so that people know. And then please, why are you in Florida? Because you moved for your husband's job. Mm-hmm. Okay, but you haven't said what your husband's job is, which is fine. One of your peers described you as a dead ringer for Jennifer Aniston. How does that make you feel? Honored. Okay. You wanted to be an archaeologist and Indiana Jones when you were growing up. Okay. And your favorite movie of all time and why? Repeat that again. That's not a very well-known movie over here.
Ah, Big Trouble in Little China. With Kurt Russell. What's his name? Russell Crowe. His last name is Russell. Why am I forgetting? I love this actor.
Kurt Russell. No.
No, it's not Kurt. It's, oh my gosh. It's terrible. Hey,
whilst you're not thinking of that, and it could be, oh, we're getting some answers in already. Put it down here. Right. That's all gone in a sort of, okay, we've got Lillette says number one is a lie. Okay. Denise says she thinks the favorite film is a lie. Okay. Angie thinks number one is a lie. Jennifer Stout thinks number one is a lie. Jean Joyce thinks number one is a lie. And that's because you moved for your husband's job. Okay, right. And Monique thinks number one is a lie. Okay, so I'm gonna go out on a rim here. If we get a right answer, I'm gonna send this copy of this book to whoever. Not whoever. Yeah. Several of you get it, we'll pull it out of a hat. But you're gonna get honest answers, not signed by Lena, but touched by me.
Which is just as valuable.
Everybody thinks number one is a lie.
I know.
So let's continue with our.
I'm laughing
already. Yes. So I just want to build on this idea about being the nice person. Yes. So I think all of us, and you know, I've been around the traps a bit, but if I'm going to a reception or a party or a gathering where I don't know anybody, I get flattered. I just don't know. Have I got, you know, is my collar right? Is my hair combed? Am I dressed properly? Mm. All of us get that, I think, don't we? Do you still get that, Lena?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I would be lying to you if I said I didn't.
Okay. Now you're not allowed to lie anymore.
Okay. I have to tell the truth.
So you have a session here that you're being the nice person and to build rapport in 5 minutes, which in today's world is the 5 minutes, isn't it? Because
it
our attention spans are gone. Tell us more about that.
Well, first, let me say this one thing, because I love this saying, and I actually learned it from my husband. He said, you know, I tell all of my peers and the people that work for him, don't mistake my kindness for weakness. And I think that's the problem, is that people think that just because you're being respectful and you're expressing empathy and trying really hard to understand where people are coming from, that's not weakness. That is kindness. And that's what we should be giving every single human on this planet and spreading that. So how to build rapport really fast. Keep that in the back of your mind. Being kind to other people is a wonderful thing and it's a powerful thing. And having empathy is very powerful and it helps us connect. Empathy connects us. Sympathy doesn't. Sympathy separates us. So it's really...
Give us an example of that, because a lot of people confuse it. Now, I come to you and let us say that I've just been in a car crash or something like that. Give us your empathy and give us your sympathy.
Empathy would be, I was in a car crash years ago and it scared me to death. I was in shock. So I can't, you know, I somewhat imagine how you feel, but I still haven't been through what you've been through. And I can't imagine how you feel right now. Right. So that is trying to understand. Tell me about how you feel. Sympathy is, oh gosh, Humphrey, I'm so sorry. That's terrible, you know, but you'll get over it. You're really sorry. So sympathy is saying, I'm sorry, and then kind of moving on. And that separates us because it makes you feel like you're over here, the person in the car crash, but I'm over here. I've never been in one, so I'm okay. So it separates us. Where empathy is, Humphrey, tell me about it. I've never been in a car crash. Tell me what happened and tell me how you feel right now. That's me trying to understand what you're going through. That connects us.
And so is that the on the sympathy factor, you then get somebody who hasn't been in a car crash, you get the carer and the victim, as it were, you know?
It could be. Yeah.
That's a bad relationship to sort of kick off with if you're chairing the local walking group.
Probably, yeah. So, Andy, right, if you're chairing the local walking group and somebody comes up and they just broke their ankle and they're in a cast and they're like, well, I can't walk today. And you say, oh, I'm so sorry. You know, I hope you get better. Yeah. But that's sympathy. That's going to separate. But empathy would be like, gosh, Jack, that's, you know, I love you. I know that you love to walk. This is what you live for. How are you feeling right now? What's going to happen in the next couple of months? Yeah. You know, is there anything that I can do to help you get through the next few months while you can't walk? Yeah. And so that's really that empathy, like trying to put yourself in their life, in their situation.
Yes. We've got, yes, Monique says empathy is putting yourself in someone else's yep. shoes, whereas the sympathy is separating yourself off. Really, I guess it's the more powerful person because somebody's yeah. had something bad happen. But Angie has an interesting question here. How do you override any feeling of animosity stroke anger towards the person you're interrogating? And we're talking about the local walking group, so the person you're dealing with there as well, particularly if they're suspected terrorists with the blood of innocent victims on their hands, or in the local walking group, they've hit somebody over the head with their walking stick and done bad things. But how do you do that?
That's a great question because it's hard to do. It's doable, but it's hard to do. So in the military, we're taught and we're trained in our training to compartmentalize information. And I almost call it a light switch. So I have to switch that switch off because yes, I'm sitting across to someone who inherently hates me, who threatens to hunt me down and my family want to kill me and tells me that we deserve 9/11. Oh my God, that's horrible, right? And I'm like, so what I have to do is I have to put it over here and I can't think about it. So my thoughts, I have to take control of my thoughts because our thoughts drive our actions. I have to take control of my thoughts and think different thoughts. And my thoughts that I started thinking were, how can I get the information from this person to prevent another atrocity and save lives? That's way more important than this person just yelling at me saying all this rhetoric. I can put that aside because right now what's more important is to connect with this person on some level, get their trust, get the truth, and stop the next attack. So it's almost like it's really thought work. It's stop thinking that train of thoughts that gets me angry.
Do you, though, have to understand a bit of why they thought 9/11 was justified? Or a similar type of atrocity that we see as an atrocity, but they might not?
So if it's going to help in the end state and that end objective of getting truthful information, then yes, you may have to express that empathy and just hear them. So I listened all the time as to why they thought it was what they had to do. And here's the thing. I didn't argue with them. I didn't judge them. I listened. But then if it wasn't a healthy conversation and wasn't going to get information for me, I would pause and then redirect the conversation, pivot that conversation to get on the topic that I could gain information and stop attacks.
So you have your result there and everything else is subservient to that result, as it were. All your own personal emotions and the morality of that, you don't fight it at all. And this, of course, is something that can be used across the board, can't it? If you're in a corporation, if you're, as I said, walking through a committee, it's what you want to achieve.
Absolutely. Let's face it, we can move into a new neighborhood and then one of the neighbors likes to cause a lot of trouble, right? And now you have this, oh, I have to deal with that neighbor and all these thoughts. If you change your thoughts, you start changing your brain chemistry and your behavior, and that's going to affect you on so many levels. And of course, when we think healthier thoughts, we are healthier mentally, emotionally, and physically.
Yeah, and anger or revenge or whatever those, they're all negative, aren't they? They burn you up.
But I'm not going to say that you can't feel anger, because you can. You're a human being. You have every right to the emotions you feel. It's just what you do next. It's how you process them. And it's the steps that you take after that initial wave of anger or frustration or jealousy or whatever it is. Then work through it and say, okay, this, I feel jealous right now. Why? Where's that coming from? And I'll also tell everybody this one key thing. No one likes to hear it, but it's absolutely true, is that no other human being on this planet can cause your emotion. It's only you. Our emotions are caused by the thoughts we think. So when I have the annoying neighbor and I watch him walk by, I have, oh, he's going to do this. He's probably going to do that, blah, blah, blah. And I have all these thoughts, which are not good, which produce the feeling and the emotion I have. If I change my thoughts, I change that emotion.
That's interesting. So if you're going into your room to build your rapport in 5 minutes and you come across somebody who deliberately or inadvertently gets your back up, they're being, you know, they because there are a lot of people that try to put other people down, aren't there?
Yes,
first thing it makes. Yeah. You should say nothing, should you, and just process that?
I meet a lot of people who have low self-esteem, and in place of low confidence and self-esteem, sometimes it goes to arrogance, and they do have to put people down because it's helping them feel better. It's helping them go through trauma. And I will tell you, a dear friend and colleague of mine, Robin Dreek, who you know,
yes,
is brilliant at this, because I have gone to Robin and say, gosh, this person really, I'm really frustrated. And I say, I know that person didn't frustrate me. I frustrated myself. And he's like, Lena, they're having a bad day. They're dealing with trauma. And I was like, you know, that's a great way to think about it. So instead of going to blame people like, why did you say this? And you're frustrating me and I didn't deserve that. Instead, just think, you know what? They're probably going through something right now that I'm not, that I know nothing about. And so maybe I forgive them. Maybe I just don't entertain it. Maybe I don't get into a dialogue that can now lead into an argument or a disagreement. Maybe I let it go and I just let it wash over me. Because at the end of the day, I want to feel good about me and how I approach people and interact with people.
So just take that thought a little bit to nail it down in my own mind. When they say something about you, like, Lena, you're looking dreadful today, are you always like that, or something, it's not actually about you, is it? They've got something else going on that they're dealing with.
Yes.
Yeah.
And this was so, oh gosh, right after COVID hit, was it 2019, right? Like after the first
week. Yeah.
And everybody on Facebook was so, I mean, the behaviors were disgusting. I had to stay off of it for months. I felt I couldn't post anything because I was getting attacked. And it just was so toxic because look what we just went through as a country. We went through this pandemic. We have no idea what's going on. We're living in a state of constant fear of the unknown, and things are happening. So a way to combat that is to get angry, is to get frustrated. And now we're taking it and we're pushing it outward onto other people. So we have it going internal. We can't process it. We can't make sense of anything. So it starts to go outward on people around us.
Yeah. That's and as somebody once told me once, I think it might've been one of your colleagues from the city, is that when you find that happening from somebody, if you go sort of go like that and don't react at all, that anger or whatever, it just has to bounce back to them and then they have to process it. Does that sound familiar to you?
I like that. I like that. And sometimes if I am in a dialogue, like if I am in an interview or an interrogation, or if I'm just talking with my neighbor, right? At some point, if I'm right there and I can't run away or I can't ignore it, I'll ask a question. And usually what I'll ask is something like this. Hey, Jack, how do you feel right now? How do you feel about what I just said? What's going on? You know, tell me about what's going on in your life or in your world. And so this way, I open the door and allow them to process their anger. Let them. And usually when I do that, at the very end of spewing whatever, they say, you know, I was out of line there. I shouldn't have said that to you. I shouldn't have snapped. And I'm sorry. I'm like, yep, it's all good because you're human. And I've done that before. I know I've done that. And I've apologized as well. You know, it's as human beings. I think every day we are striving to be a better human. And it takes work.
Yeah. And this is common. This is a fascinating common ground here that you believe that everybody has this goodness of humanity in them. And it's just a matter of pulling all the rubbish away and getting to that point. We have some questions coming in, but firstly, I want to get you on the third point that you talk about, building rapport in 5 minutes, is building rapport doesn't mean that you can't discuss difficult topics. Now, in Britain, we have got a sort of thing that goes back centuries, is that we really only discuss the weather because everything else gets too complicated, church politics, everything like that. So how do you do that? How do you bring in, those issues that spark things? Say in the US, you have like gun control, abortion, Trump, that sort of thing. How do you do that?
So I do talk about all those topics. I don't shy away. I call the elephant out in the room. But here's the deal. I make sure that it's common ground. If I can express my opinions, you can express yours. If you want me to listen to your opinions, I definitely will, without judgment, without bias, without anything. But then you have to offer me that same respect. And so it's a quid pro quo relationship. And once that happens, then it's okay. You can talk about those challenging issues. But if it's not, if we're not meeting each other and we're not giving that respectful, respect to each other, I had a term I can't remember, then it's not going to happen. You can't discuss those topics, because if you're with somebody and they don't allow you to have an opinion, they don't want to hear your opinion, and they're trying to bring you over and say, no, what I'm saying is right. You can't discuss those topics. And I tell you, that's a factor of human psychology too. We as humans have a tendency to want to be right and to want to drag people over to believe what we believe. And sometimes that's so strong, and that leads into an argument.
And has anybody, and this is fascinating, anybody, got any topics that they're terrified of discussing or don't want to discuss either with their friends or family that are going to create a row? The one here that we all lived with was Brexit, and you didn't quite know how people were. And you had Trump or similar stuff at the same time. I'm going to get to these questions. I'm loving them coming in. But let's go to the difficult topic. A similar thing is, don't be afraid to call out the elephant in the room. Elephant in the room being the thing that nobody wants to talk about. And you're in there in your walking group committee annual meeting, and you're going to say something that nobody wants to talk about. How do you do that?
Oof. You have to have confidence. You have to have the confidence in yourself to be able to bring up that topic and not get emotional. And if that person responds in a negative way, to put it over here and change your thoughts, right? So it's always a respectful conversation. That's hard work. But you have to go in with that confidence and to be able to do that. Now with rapport, I talk about how to build it in 5 minutes. If you can connect with someone and find that common ground, a similar interest, a shared trait, then you will have that connection, and that connection brings trust. There was one time I was working on the TV show Couples Court for 3 years, and I had one of my litigants come in, and he was being accused of cheating on his wife. And after a couple of minutes and reading, his accusations, I was like, this guy's definitely lying. I believe he's really cheating. So I called the elephant out the room. 30 minutes into the interview, I just said, hey, Darnell, let's talk about this. Let's talk about how you're cheating on your wife. And he was like, what? But I told you I'm not. I'm like, I know you told me that, but I don't believe it. And he just looked at me and I said, listen, you are a funny guy, and you can't tell me that women are not flocking to you. And he's like, well, I said, see, I've treated you with respect in this interview, and I know you trust me enough to tell me what really happened. And he's like, I've been cheating for the last 3 years every week. And I was like, all right, then. But it's at some point, if you have that connection, you have the respect, you have the trust, and it doesn't mean that you guys have to be best friends. That's not going to happen. But at least you're treating this person like a human. You can call out the elephant in the room without them getting too upset.
Yeah. And I guess on some issues, I mean, that was quite a personal one. But on the bigger issues, as I said, we got Brexit, the royal family and everything here. You have your issues there. If you're in a room, is it best not to talk about them whilst you're building the rapport, unless they have to be spoken about?
I would say yes. I would always avoid the touchy conversations unless they have to. And then, of course, if it starts getting a little dicey, you could always go with your interrogative questions. And I may say, Humphrey, why do you feel so strongly about that?
Yeah.
And instead of saying, oh, you're crazy, why would you believe that? You should believe this. I just ask you more questions to explain your stance and listen to you. And then I drop the conversation and I pivot to another topic.
Yeah. And keep it going. We have got Denise says, I'd like a follow-up from you, Denise, on this one. When I was younger, situations were more black and white. But as I have aged, there is a lot more gray and a lot more empathy. Is that to do with, Denise, with our era that we're living in, or your own age, as it were? Lena?
I agree. I read that comment. And I think it's just the knowledge that we know. As we age, we become more wiser. We're also more careful in our human-to-human interactions because now they're worth something. You know, I could lose a potential client if I say the wrong thing. Whereas when I was younger, I didn't have to worry about that. Right. I could say anything and get away with it because the consequences weren't that strong. But now, you know, the consequences are pretty heavy.
Yeah. And the understanding, of course, that's the confidence of youth when you think you can do anything at any time, which is sort of great. I try to cling on to it myself, but, you know, you never quite know. And Angie is shouting at the TV, cop shows where the detectives offer the suspect a soda and within a minute they give a full confession. Does that resonate with you?
The Hollywood. And it's funny because, you know, I'm part of SPYX. And yeah. When we did the super fun event last October called, I don't know if I can swear, Bull Asterisk. Bullseye. you know, they played clips of how movies and TV shows and said, is that legit or not? And the whole... So listen, offering a soda, great. It's an incentive technique. Yes, it can build the rapport. Yes, you're, you know, doing something nice for someone. So it can help. But it's very rare that I give you a soda and you're like, okay, I'm gonna tell the truth. Yeah. It takes a little more effort than that.
You have to, but when you watch these movies, which I'm sure you do, and we all do, mm-hmm. where you have the type of interrogation that you describe, which is more like John le Carré and George Smiley, where you sort of bring somebody around and crack them, or you have your sort of action hero putting a bullet in somebody's thigh or something, getting it. Which one do you sort of get sort of, oh, that'll never happen, or yes, that's the way to do it? Do you get emotional about them?
Not emotional, but I do the eye roll. Definitely do the eye roll. When they're getting all aggressive and slamming the table and yelling, I'm like, oh gosh, here we go again. Hollywood's got it wrong again. But for some reason, it sells movies, so I don't know.
Yeah, it's a different trade, and it is Hollywood. It is fantasy. So, Monique, what is the most frightening situation you've ever been in?
Ooh, that's a good question, because at Gitmo, I was never in Afghanistan or Iraq, so I really didn't fear for my life. Yes, I would have some detainees in the small room I was in threaten me with this, that, and the other. And in the beginning, because there was a lot of aggression, but I didn't really fear for my life. Although the very first day I came in Gitmo, got the tour of the interrogation camp in the prison, I was scared that day. So I was like, what the heck did I get myself into? How did I get here? I was supposed to be Indiana Jones and I'm now in Gitmo in a prison. I'm like, oh, that was a very scary. My first interrogation was scary, but it was just my fear of the unknown.
Yeah, I just have to remind our audience that the Indiana Jones reference there was in answer to one of your questions of what you wanted to do when you were growing up. And is it true, or was she throwing in another red herring there? Our great Lena Sisko here.
I'm good at lying.
But there's also, frightening situation is that you were not succeeding in getting the information and your lives were depending on it.
Yeah, that was terrifying. The first week I was in Gitmo, I was trained as an interrogator in 1999, and then I did nothing. There was no war. There was nothing. I mean, we would refresh our training, but it was all training. So this is the first time I'm doing it real world, and I was not good. And I left my first two interrogations going back to my home or the place I was staying going, I'm horrible. I shouldn't be here. People are dying because of my inadequacy of my job. And I beat myself up. But let me tell you, that third interrogation, I walked in with the same interpreter and I was like, today's going to be different. I'm getting information, whether I'm here all day. In 8 hours, I got like 20 pages of notes. And because I also started using my techniques, which was all rapport-based, non-accusatory. I'm like, I know humans. I know how to connect to them. I have this, you know, inherently I've been doing this all my life anyway. So I'm like, I'm going to put aside some of the stuff that in my training, which again, I use my approach techniques, but I'm like, I'm really going to get to know the person first. I'm going to go in with a completely different approach and work that angle. And it started working.
Well, that's, I mean, yeah, that and you, the notes you took were not lies?
So, no. Well, they lied to me, but then I would call the elephant out in the room.
And okay. Say, okay. Know, like, let's like talk the example you gave. Yeah. Angie said, I think we might have addressed this a bit, but we can fill out in a bit. Angie says, do you believe that lockdown has resulted in what was originally online aggression now being encountered far more widely in real life situations?
Yeah.
Good question. Yes.
That is a good question. There's so much that has happened in the last few years, especially, you know, I could speak obviously in the US, we had the pandemic. Then we roll into, you know, political stuff with the Trump. Then we have Black Lives Matter. We have all of these things happening where you had two camps, pro or against. And then people, if they weren't with you, were your enemy. It was almost like we lost the ability for anybody to have an opinion about anything. And it would just started separating us. And that's what got the aggression. And instead of saying, okay, I hear you. You know, I don't believe that. I believe this, but I'm willing to listen to your belief. That went away. It was like, how dare you? You know, you could only believe what I believe. And it just really tore us apart.
And that has gone right to the top of our politics, hasn't it? Certainly yeah. Here in Britain, where whatever the prime minister says or the leader of the opposition says, the other one rips it apart immediately.
Immediately.
And also denigrating the person, you know, yeah. personally, as opposed to the idea. And we've seen this a lot in the States as well. This is incredibly damaging, isn't it?
Yeah. And think about it. As a human, would you want to live every day mad? Why would you want to do that? Yeah. You know, it affects your health. Stress, it kills us. And so, you know, waking up every day with this aggression and a how dare they attitude and a don't you say anything against what I believe. Yeah. Why would you want to live every day like that?
Yeah. Lillette, thank you for being so honest. Lillette says, my husband and I have always been on different sides about Brexit. Can't discuss it. That is a deeply buried elephant in the room, is it not?
Yeah. And, you know, my husband and I also have a dichotomy. I won't get so far into it, but we have two different beliefs. And what we've learned to do is just say, It took a while because at first we were like, well, we'll just agree to disagree. Yeah, that doesn't happen because humans have a hard time doing that. So instead I said, you know what? Let me listen. Babe, I'm going to listen to you. And I listened and I said, okay. I was like, yeah, well, it makes sense as to why you believe that. Will you listen to me? And he said, okay. And he listened to me and that's it. And we put it in the past and moved on. And now if that topic comes up, yeah. I have no problem saying, well, my husband doesn't believe that. He believes this. I believe this because of my background, my upbringing, my education, blah, blah, blah. And my husband believes this because of the same thing. And we're fine with that.
Yeah. And I have similar conversations with people here and in the US when they talk about China. And I say, if you've been raised under the Chinese Communist Party, you're not going to automatically believe in democracy, particularly when you see all the gun crime and all that sort of thing. And I think that message is slowly getting through about having to listen to people and then agree to move on it. Geeta asks, yes, give us an encapsulation of this because you did not become Indiana Jones or an archaeologist. How did you get into this? Was it something you always wanted to do?
No, I fell into it by a complete accident. This was not planned at all. I didn't have a job at one point in my life. And my dad's like, lady, you need to get a job and move out of the house. And so I thought, oh, what do I do? And I had a friend say, hey, why don't you join the military? Instead of being Indiana Jones, you could be James Bond and do super cool intelligence stuff. And back then I was all about adventure. I wanted to do cool things. So I was like, okay, I'll try it. And I signed up for a 6-year contract. That was that.
Okay. And yeah. So you didn't head off to Africa to find the lost tombs of the tribal chiefs like Indiana Jones did?
Well, I can't say that, right? Because that people have to figure out that was
of course not. We can't say it. Yes, that's my faux pas. The Angie, I did like
this. Dying me out.
As we age, though, our sensitivities do change. But with parenthood, our tolerance for child-related crime often radically shrinks.
Oh, as it should. Listen, there's some things that happen in the world that I have no tolerance for. There's no tolerance, and it needs to be stopped. So, yeah, I agree with her. And I would wholeheartedly.
Yes. And one book, I think, reflects the tone. I'm going to get back to the book in a second, but there's more intolerance now, and people are not always interested in hearing other opinions. And this has changed since you first started your training back in about 20-odd years ago. That's all changed.
Yeah, it does. The shift has been crazy. And I think that's why, you know, today I've taken all my skills that I use as, you know, a human intelligence officer, and I've brought them to the private sector. I bring them to civilians. I offer one-on-one personal coaching even to help people in a myriad of instances and numerous industries. I help entrepreneurs. I help real estate agents. I help other people who are offering coaching programs, but it's all based on communication, inter and intrapersonal communication skills, which is being able to, you know, really control a conversation and be accountable for every word that comes out of your mouth. It's having that trust-based, non-accusatory, rapport-based conversation to make people feel safe and comfortable to give you the truth so you can make critical decisions.
That phrase non-accusatory is very important, actually, because what it's actually saying in today's environment is don't be too free with your own opinions, because if people are going to take it, guess. After the elephant in the room, on your fifth one, you have be done when you want to be done. Explain that.
Yeah. Don't allow people to push you into an area that you don't want to go. Don't allow people to take control over you, to, you know, force opinions on you. Be done when you're done. If the conversation is not healthy and it's going in a place where you think it's just going to get worse, then be done with it. And politely just say, you know, excuse yourself, whether it's, I'm not comfortable discussing this anymore, and we can circle back later, or I'm not comfortable discussing this topic. I appreciate the conversation you have with me, but it's time for me to go. But be done when you're done.
So give me an example. Let's stick to our walking group example, but you have been through the estate agents and everything, so we get the idea of where we are. And somebody starts speaking blatantly racist remarks. They think they're in a quiet group. They can speak their mind. How do you get out of that? You don't challenge them, or you do challenge them. What do you do?
No, I do challenge them. Listen, I don't tolerate those types of remarks or conversations in this group. So, you know, it's going to stop here. And I'll say it politely. I'm like, listen, we don't tolerate that. We actually don't talk about that. And I don't believe it's respectful. So in this group, it's not welcome.
Okay. That's a very good sort of hard, good thing.
Yeah. And that's the best thing. Keep it simple and clear.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. In this group, we don't tolerate that conversation. And then what I smile and I move on to the next topic, and everybody hears my message. They get it. And they're like, oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, over here, there are conversations that go into what I call an abyss very quickly, because racism stroke immigration is sort of linked. So somebody will start talking about immigration and it turns out that it's a racist comment. And as we talked earlier, Brexit and Liles living in every day with that elephant in the room, you know, is something that we've avoided. Don't tell, ask, you say.
Yes. So this is really coming when you're having that heart-to-heart conversation with someone and you really need truthful, honest answers to make a critical decision in your life. Do you trust your new babysitter? Do you trust this new client? Do you trust a new hire employee that you're hiring for your company? So when I need to find out something, I don't tell people what they did and why they did it. If I don't know, ask what they did and why they did it. Because oftentimes, and I see this so much in Hollywood movies, right? They will tell a suspect, well, listen, I know you had to sell drugs. You know, you have a family, you're out of a job, you need to provide to them. It makes sense. If I was in your shoes, I would do the same thing. And then what if this person is selling drugs just because they want to sell drugs and take them? They're not providing for their family. You just gave them a way out. So to avoid giving a person a way out of the truth, don't tell people what they did or why they did it. Ask them.
Ask, let them tell you.
Yeah. Humphrey, why did you make that decision?
Yeah.
I'm not going to tell you why you made it. I want you to tell me.
And then don't judge. Another thing you said earlier on is don't judge people, or you can judge them in your subconscious, but don't openly judge people.
No. Because the thing is, people are like, well, why? Do you want to be judged? Yeah. Right. Judging others and labeling others is not going to get that trust.
Yeah.
Because nobody wants to be judged. Nobody wants to be labeled. They want to be heard, but they don't want to be judged.
Yeah. I think this. Emma says, be done when you're done is a very good motto. Thank you. And also your response to the otherwise difficult conversations. That's a smart answer. So these are the tips that we're getting. And although we're running out of time, we have got time to, because I see your head, the way your hair is, the way you move your head, the way you use your arms. That's all called body language, isn't it, Lena? So how do we tell body language?
Yes, it's my nonverbals. So you've been, you know, I talk with my hands. I'm Italian. This is what I do. You know my baseline. I do a lot of eyebrow flashing. I'm very expressive. I smile a lot. This is how I talk. If any chance I were to be different and look different and sound different, so I become softer, I am slower in my rate of speech, I'm quiet in my body language. We call that the baseline. The baseline is off. So something has changed. Maybe my thinking, maybe my comfort level, maybe my stress level, but something has changed. And so you may have seen that when I was giving you my five answers in one that I lied about.
And you've got to tell the truth on this. Did you deliberately change your body language?
No.
When you lied?
No.
Or we just might have spotted it happening?
Yeah, I didn't deliberately do anything. I just let it go. And I don't like to lie. It makes me feel really uncomfortable. So I was like, I don't want to do this.
So tell me, how do you, when you've got your 5 minutes to build rapport that we've talked about, how long does it take you to establish a baseline of your body language?
Just a few minutes. Just talk to that person. But the thing is, you have to have that person relaxed. That's the only thing. They just have to feel relaxed and comfortable and get a sense of how they sound and how they look from the head to the toes. Listen to the voice, the pitch, the rate of speech, the words that they use. Are they humorous? Are they extrovert, introvert? Do they talk with their hands? Do they give you good eye contact? Are they open and taking up space? Or are they covering up? Who are they? What do they normally do? And then see if that changes. And of course, we could go into a whole nother hour talking about all the specific nonverbals.
Yes. So nonverbal is all body language, is this another nonverbal?
No. So nonverbals are anything you see, right? Facial expressions and the whole gestures in your body language. The verbals are the words that people use.
Okay. So just to sort of sum up in a way, in our walking group party that we're having here, the smart thing to do is to go in and absorb all of this stuff, see how people see the body language, see how they're talking, see what their views are, before you give anything of yourself?
It depends. So I like to immediately create the safe environment by having good eye contact, greeting people, having no power zones covered up. I'm open in my body language. It says I'm open and approachable. I will show interest. I'll ask how people feel. You know, smiles are infectious. When I smile, people smile. So I usually start the ball rolling. And then in face, belly button to belly button. When you're faced off with a person that says, listen, I'm interested in you and what you have to say.
Yeah.
And it creates a welcoming environment.
Yes. Yes. And all the time, though, you're absorbing what you're seeing and what you're doing and how to get the honest answers. Jenny wants you to come back and talk about nonverbals. Well, we'll see about that. We'll spy X you on that one.
Yeah.
And Guy would love to hear more. Will you come back? Everybody's loving you here, although you are going to be a proven liar.
I know. You're going to laugh when you find out which one it is and why. I'm going to share why.
We're going to get to that in a second. We've only covered a fraction of the book, but we have learned a lot. Can you sit there for 2 seconds whilst I'm going to bring you in, tell our people what is coming up here. On Friday, that is tomorrow, I am with your colleague, Robin Dreek, and he is going to go deeper into untangling these thorny issues, whether you're in the village walking group or sitting on a corporate board. His books include Sizing People Up, The Code of Trust, and It's Not All About Me. Lena, what is Robin going to tell us that you haven't told us?
He's going to talk about being curious. I know Robin. And he's going to say what a good quality it is, being curious and being humble. And I agree with him.
Okay. Curiosity and humility are two. Yes. Two points that's great. So tune in for that tomorrow because we're gonna go deeper into this topic. March the 9th, that is next week, Inside Story with Lucinda. We're gonna go to the literary world of rock and roll with the author Philip Clark, whose biography of the legendary guitarist of the Kinks, that's Dave Davis, Living on a Thin Line, published last year. And he's currently writing a history of sound of New York City. That is going to be a great one. March 10th, and Lucinda goes into the real literary world with Natalie Jenner and her best-selling book, The Jane Austen Society and the Bloomsbury Girls. Then March 16th, I am with John and Mary James, who run an award-winning independent bookshop on the wild Suffolk coast. And they also founded the Aubra Literary Festival, which starts this weekend. And they've edited their own anthology of Suffolk writings. What's it like to run a bookshop in the countryside? Come and join us for that. They'll answer all your questions. And then the next day, that's March 17th, we go from cozy Suffolk to the deception and intrigue of Jack Barsky and his deep undercover, My Secret Life and Tangled Allegiances as a KGB spy in America. You will meet a spy who worked for the Russian KGB during the Cold War and lived undercover with a wife and children in the United States until he was eventually found out. You know Jack, don't you, Lena?
I do. Mm-hmm.
I mean, how did he must have lied and lied and lied.
He lived a lie. And it was scary. And wait until you hear his story. It's amazing.
So he would have gone through all of these things that one does, like houses and cars and everything like that, lying all the time, and nobody found out.
Yep. Yeah.
That is something. Now we're going to go to your, if I can find it, we're going to go to the competition and the answers. Here we go. I'm going to put these in the chat again so that we can go through them. And any last answers, anybody, just put them. We'll give you a few seconds as we go through them. Most of them came out as being number one, didn't they?
I know.
Didn't they? And I think a couple came out as being number two. So why are you in Florida? You moved for your husband's job. One of your peers described you as a dead ringer for Jenna Aniston. How do you feel about that? You felt honored. Mm-hmm. When you were growing up, you see, I'm looking at your body language as I read these out. When you were growing up, what was your dream career? An archaeologist? You wanted to be Indiana Jones. What is your favorite movie of all time? Big Trouble in Little China with somebody called Russell that we can't remember in it. And which country do you really want to visit that you haven't been to yet? That is the Maldives. We have got Michelle has guessed Jennifer Aniston. Number two is your lie. And most of them, I'm not going to scroll back up, came in as number one. That was moving for your husband's job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which one? Oh, wait a minute. We have one coming in, says that the Maldives is the lie.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. I'm going to show you something.
Okay. What is, that is the lie. You now, never that's wanted to be an archaeologist.
That's the truth. So much so that I have a little toy figurine of Harrison Ford. Okay, so number one, it was the truth. But here's the deal as why everybody thought it wasn't. And I don't blame you because my rate of speech went whoosh. It slowed right down. I was like, because of my husband's job. It sounded deceptive. But the reason why is because I was thinking, I can't really talk about my husband's job. And so that's where that I think those, whatever that gut feeling came out. But it was true. We moved to Florida for my husband's job. Two was the Jennifer Aniston. I get super embarrassed when people flatter me. So you saw embarrassment and I was like, oh, so it's embarrassment, which causes people to smile and it causes me to like avoid eye contact. So that's probably why some of you thought number two, but that was true. Number three was the, Indiana Jones, right?
Yes. Yes. Number three was that you wanted to be an archaeologist. You never wanted to be an archaeologist.
No, I did. That's legit. I was an archaeologist for 2 years. I was digging in Greece and Italy. Yeah, that was my dream job. My first career was as an archaeologist.
So was the Indiana Jones bit really a lie?
No, that's true. That one was true.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So then we have the movie. Yeah. Right, which is Big Trouble Little China. That's the truth too, and I can't. It must be Kurt Russell. He's an '80s actor. I love him to death. I can't remember his name. But anyway, number five was the lie, and somebody did get it. And here's why: so we kept going through the questions. I was so nervous because, like, oh, they're going to see me lying. They're going to know. I'm going to go which is typical for me. That's a dead giveaway. I'm lying because I go and I have to think about it. And every question, the answer kept coming out. I'm like, well, shoot, I have to lie about number five. I'm out of questions. And so when you asked me, it was so super fast. I didn't even think about it. Yeah. And the first thing I was like, oh, I know somebody had talked about a conference in the Maldives. I was like, Maldives, that's it. And it looks like the Caribbean. So the only way you would have known, but somebody did get it.
Yes, I did. I've got Josie Morgan got it. And Josie, you email Goldster, we will send you honest answers. Unsigned by Lena, but if ever she comes to London for one of our shows or Britain, we can get it signed.
Awesome. I love it. Well, you know, I was just in Wales, not just in September. I was in Wales. Yes. I should have looked you up. But anyway, that was the lie. I didn't think about it. I kept direct eye contact and I just spit it out like rapid fire. Usually when people ask you a question, there's a couple seconds of thought. Yeah. There was no thinking there. It was like,
So could any of us have got that?
Yeah. And Josie did. Because maybe she heard that super quick response, whereas every other response, I paused just a couple of seconds and I laughed and I smiled and my body language probably never changed. I was like Big Trouble, Little China. I love that movie. It's silly, but I love it, right? Indiana Jones, archaeology. I probably was my way. But on Maldives, it was Maldives because it looks like the Caribbean.
Yeah. And congratulations. And Josie says she is absolutely delighted to be getting it. We will get that to you. And Agita says, thank you so much. But we're not quite finished yet because I have one more question to ask you if I can get to it right time. Because, give us the true answer to the Maldives question.
Oh, what was the question? Where I want to go?
Your bucket list. Which country do you really want to go to that you haven't been to?
I really want to go to Costa Rica. I'm dying to go to the rainforest. I'm a huge animal advocate and lover, so I want to be around all the nature and the animals. So yeah, Costa Rica.
Oh, brilliant! And lastly, before we vanish off here, Goldster, as you know, because you've been back here, is for people over 50s, you know, maybe moving into new areas of life, maybe going into that walking group, maybe going to run a real estate agency, maybe joining up to be an interrogator. Who knows? I mean, you know, what are your thoughts of them if they sort of get cold feet about doing that? What would your thoughts be to push them into these new areas?
So I you know, I am over that hump as well. And I'm still doing new things. And here's the thing. If you truly want to do something, there's no wrong time. There's no right time. Just do it. Never. It's not too late to go after what you want to do. And so have the confidence, change those thoughts. I can do this. This is going to make me happy. This is exciting adventure. And if I fail, if it doesn't work out, it's okay. And I'm going to allow myself to be okay with it. But go for it, right? Just do what you want to do.
Okay, go for it. That is what we've been talking about. And you are an example of going for it, because haven't you got a conference with Robin coming up?
Yes, we're going for it. We decided to.
What are you doing? Tell us about it.
Oh my gosh, I can't even believe I'm doing this, but we're hosting an epic event. It's a 2-day event in September 14th and 15th in Dallas at the gorgeous Adolphus Hotel. And I have two companies. My second company that I started just a few years ago is called Sector Intelligence, where we bring all these cool techniques that I learned in military intelligence to the private sector, to any civilian, to any industry. And so this conference, Robin Drake is going to be one of my keynote speakers. We have Janine Driver as our celebrity keynote speaker, but it's a fun 2 days of entertainment and education. There's a lot of breakout sessions. You're going to be learning body language, elicitation, interviewing, rapport building. And then we're even going to take it to, you know, security issues. So we have a former CIA agent, and she's hosting a spy game for everybody. We have the 007 martini meet and greet happy hour.
The 007, you said, and is it Janine Driver? She was the one that thought you were Jennifer Aniston, wasn't she?
Yes, she did. Yes. Yes.
This is great. If you want to know anything more about Lena, Rob, and any of those people, spyx.com. It's this great organization that we sort of inadvertently, but thankfully, become partnered with, has given us all these great stories, spyx.com. But we're there. In fact, we're over time because it's just past 8 in the morning in Florida, and you need to get back to your day job. What a great guest you've been, Lena. And what a great audience with all those questions,
yes,
comments, great. And the Brexit elephant in the room and all the rest of it. My big takeaway is to always be the nice guy. And you don't get anywhere by deliberately tripping up somebody's dignity. I mean, that's what I've come to. But we're going to explore more of that tomorrow with Robin Drake. More insight. Until then, stay involved. Stay socially interactive. Join that committee on the walking group. Have tea with a Bedou tribesman like Rosie Stancer is doing. Stay curious, stay safe. And of course, stay Goldster. Thank you, Lena Sisko, for being such a brilliantly lying and honest guest. Bye. Bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening, and find out our vast range on www.goldster.co.uk. Our vision is to help people stay stimulated, active, socializing, and empowered in what we say live happier and healthier for longer. The podcast is one of many strands, which includes nutrition, yoga, art, singing, languages, brain power, love, and many, many others, more than 300, all from the comfort of your home. If you like what you hear, please press that big subscribe button and tell your friends, family, colleagues, community, and yes, your enemies too, about what Goldster does. Spread the word about our incredible range of guests and subject, and until next time, goodbye from all of us at Goldster.